This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they saw Manny, they saw David, so they start taking people for granted.
Opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team out, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
Patriots open training camp. Red Sox hit the trade deadline, and the Bruins the big haul as free agency hits in the NHL. I am Chris Ryan. Thanks for joining us for the Press Pass. We'll start with the Patriots. They open training camp this week, and Bill Belichick not downplaying it, but actually introducing quarterback controversy, as he had previously said that Cam Newton is his guy, but now has said it's open for battle between Newton as well as Mac Jones to be the Patriots' top starter. We'll see how that plays out throughout the course of training camp. We'll hear from Devin McCourty and David Andrews in just a moment as the Patriots get set and begin training camp. We'll hear from Bo Bichette, former New Hampshire Fisher Cat, who's having a phenomenal year for the Toronto Blue Jays. Blue Jays split with the Sox at Fenway Park. Also, Nathan Eovaldi joined us to talk about Chris Sale coming back, what to expect from Sale as he'll return in August to the Red Sox, and he'll start, Eovaldi will, today against the Rays in Tampa. Start, though, with the Patriots. They get set for training camp. A number of high-priced and high-profile free agents coming in for the Pats this year. Devin McCourty, of course, has won three Super Bowl championships. He is now 34 years of age and is both a link to the future and the past for the Pats.
Hey, Dev, hope all is well with you. What role do you take in terms of instilling the cultural side of things with the new players? And how do you go about establishing that culture with all the new free agent players as to what this team is about, what your expectations are in the locker room?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you ask like that culture question, it's just a blend of doing what we do, I think. For years, like, that culture is passed down. Like, I've never played in a game with Teddy Bruschi or Rodney Harrison or McGinnis. But the things that they did and the things that and how the defense operated, I saw through Vince Wilfer, I saw it through Gerard Mayo. And I think that's what we have to do. Guys that have been here, guys like myself, guys like Hightower, guys like Van Ooy, guys now that like LG who have been here for years, we understand how things work. And you just do those things. I think it's so overrated sometimes in the media, writing about what a guy said to a guy and what he told these young guys or told these free agents. Like, none of that matters. It's all about what we do day in and day out. And that's how culture is built. So it's the guys that have been here, and it's the new guys bringing in new twisted things. Like, it's everybody coming together and creating what the 2021 Patriots will be. But I think that culture is already instilled in the building through generations of players who have come in here and given it all to go out there and win Super Bowls and win big games. Like, that stuff's passed down through film and then through word of mouth between players who have kind of been a part of different generations year in and year out. And, you know, guys like Julian Edelman, like, you'll hear Julian Edelman's stories throughout this building for the next 15, 25, 30 years. And that'll be because each time a guy plays, a guy passes it down to another guy. And I think that's what it's all about when you talk about culture. So it's guys that have been here continue to do it. And the young guys and the new guys will see that and they'll learn and do those things the same way.
So can you tell how good the Patriots are going to be just based upon how they look in training camp? Can you get a feel for a football team during that process? I talked with Patriots center and offensive captain David Andrews about that.
There's been a lot of talk about how good this team could be on paper. Is there a time during training camp where you can get a sense for how good the team actually is, or is that something that has to be determined through the course of the season?
I mean, I think you can kind of start to identify maybe some of your strengths and weaknesses as a team at times. I think it's something that it doesn't really matter to, if you guys are the best team in training camp, well, that's good for you, but it's really going to matter, week 8, 10, 11, 12, whatever. And there's been years we've started off really strong and haven't finished the year great. There's been years where we've, kind of been up and down throughout the year, and then, you know, turned it on for the last six games. So I think it's just to really continue to get better each week. You know, I think that's the biggest thing. You know, no matter what, you never want to plateau during the season. So if you hit your best football in training camp, it's probably going to be a long year, I would assume. But just try to get better each week, man. You know, paper is paper. What matters is the product we put out there.
To the Red Sox. Now, trade deadline has come and gone for the Sox, but the biggest acquisition is going to be a 6'7" lefty who will be on the mound for the Sox at some point, probably in early to mid-August, and that is Chris Sale. But how good can Sale be? Can Sale be the ace they needed to acquire at the trade deadline? Talked with somebody who knows a little bit about pitching and also pitching after significant injuries, including Tommy John. Nathan Eovaldi gets the ball for the Sox tonight in Tampa in this huge series against the Rays.
Nate, Alex has talked a lot about how Chris Sale could be the best trade deadline acquisition in baseball. What do you think are reasonable expectations, though, for him coming back? We've all seen the video. We've seen how he looks. We've heard the reports. Do you think it's reasonable to expect him to come back and be Chris Sale, given what he has gone through?
I mean, I think it is. I mean, you see what he's been able to do when he's healthy, and then, I mean, he's been able to spend all offseason, and, you know, he has that drive, that motivation again. Coming back from Tommy John to be able to, you know, be an impact on the team, of course. And, you know, we all expect him to be able to do that. And, you know, he holds himself at such high standards. I don't see that why there wouldn't be any reason for him not to be able to do what he's been able to do.
So that's, you know, your expectation he's going to come back and he is going to be that number one starter that obviously you have been and Eduardo has been at times. But do you think he's going to take that, quote unquote, be Chris Sale again?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I don't think he has to worry about, like, being the number one guy. I mean, he's going to be back, and him being back is going to be enough. And I think, you know, when I was going through my Tommy John, it's definitely a lot harder to watch a team struggle than it is when we're winning. And I think the pitching staff's been doing extremely well. Bullpen's been doing well. You know, we've been winning ball games, so it makes it, you know, in my opinion, there's less pressure trying to rush yourself back. And I think, you know, with him being able to take his time and make sure that he's 100% before coming back, and, you know, him not having any limitations when he gets back is going to be the biggest thing for us.
Yeah, I remember talking to him about that in spring training, and, you know, I wondered if perhaps being as competitive as he was, he'd try to get back a little bit quicker. But it seems like they've let the process really play out, and that really seems to have been a focus throughout the course of this pitching staff, is putting everybody in a position where they can be successful and allow for, you know, you guys to make start after start.
I think one of the biggest things too is AC and our training staff. You know, they do a very good job of communicating with us, talking to us, and, you know, there's been a lot of games this year where AC's taken us out at 80 pitches, 90 pitches, whether it's, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh inning. You know, he's doing so in my eyes to protect us. You know what I mean? He sees the bigger picture, and that's making the playoffs and going deep in the playoffs. And you saw how he used us in 18. And, you know, with everything that happened last year, all the teams struggling, you know what I mean, just to get that, you know, the full 60 games and everybody not having a lot of innings under the belt last year, coming into play this year, I think it's going to be big. And, you know, we want to stay as fresh as possible and not really have to grind as much, you know, body-wise out there until the playoffs and stuff start.
Final thing on you, the start against the Yankees on Saturday I thought was one of your best, if not your best, of the year. I believe through only 18 balls throughout the course of that and had pretty much all of your pitches working. When you have that arsenal of, you know, six pitches that you're using and you're throwing them all for strikes, how does that change your mindset during the course of the game? And are there times where you just, you know, you feel like throwing a pitch because of the way that you feel it's going that day, and it'll perhaps change your pregame plan as to how you want to attack the strike zone?
Yeah, it's one of those kind of unique situations where, you know, I have 5-6 pitches, but they're not always working. They're right. Not always all working at the same time, and you want to, you know, you don't want to shy away from them. You'll still use them in certain counts, but, you know, the start against the Yankees, I felt like I had really good fastball command. I felt like they weren't swinging as much early, so I was able to establish the zone with my fastball, and then my splitter had a really good feel for that pitch, which, you know, it's been feeling better and better lately. But in the past, I've struggled to throw it for strikes. When I started against the Yankees, I was able to throw it for strikes and keep them off balance. And then when I'm able to, you know, flip the curveball in there for strikes as well, the slider, it's, you know, it's hard for guys to, you know, try to tie me up. And, hit the pitches, but, you know, I was able to get big double play balls when I needed to. We were able to score early in the game, you know what I mean? So it's like you have less pressure when you're out there and it's a 0-0 ball, or, you know, you're up by three as opposed to if it's a 0-0 ball game.
Final thing is on the slider, where you've utilized the curveball. That's been one of your best pitches for a long period of time. How has the slider over the last couple starts changed things for you? And it, having a number of pitches that look the same but have different velocity is something that is obviously a unique skill. Throwing for strike is important, but has the slider helped your curveball? How do you view how the slider has helped your overall repertoire?
You know, I feel like the slider has been one of my most, you know, other than my splitter, been kind of inconsistent. You know, I've been able to rely on my fastball, the curveball, and the cutter, you know, and that's been helping me out a lot against the lefties, but I need the slider against the righties. And at times, you know, the other day I felt like I was able to use my splitter, because when I have my splitter working, I can use that to attack the right-handed hitters. So I felt like I really didn't have to throw very many sliders the other day, and maybe that's why, you know, I threw so many strikes. But, you know, the times I was able to get some first pitch outs on the slider, you know, it's definitely big for me. And, you know, it's a big pitch for me when I need a double play ball and, you know, kind of stuff that along those lines.
Yep. Sweet. Thanks, Nate.
Yeah.
No Appreciate
problem.
It.
Thank you.
Red Sox starter Nathan Eovaldi. Bo Bichette spent the 2018 season with the New Hampshire Fisher Cats, and since then, starting 2019, has been one of the best players in Major League Baseball. So fun to watch the way he attacks in the batter's box, the flair he plays the game with. He's certainly one of the young stars of the game, and I have to sit down with Bo Bichette at Fenway Park this week.
Bo Bichette is off to a historically good start to his big league career. Through 162 games, an average over 300, home runs over 30, and 100 RBIs plus. Do you think at all about the type of start that you're off to in your big league career? And because it matches up with some of the all-time greats, and you're still obviously 23 years of age.
Yeah, no, not really. I think there's so many things that I need to get better at. Also, it's 170 games or whatever, so you know, I've got a lot more to prove.
And when you think about that as well, I mean, it's been a span of three seasons also, and I was talking to George Springer before, and we talked earlier this year. I mean, there have been ups and downs throughout the course of that process, so you have battled at times, you've adjusted to the league. Why do you think you have had this type of success at such a young age?
I think I was pretty prepared for it mentally. I understood a lot about how to grind through struggles. A lot of it came from my dad teaching me things at a young age, and a lot of it came from going through my own struggles in the minor leagues too. So I was just prepared to continue to grind, whether I felt good or whether I didn't, and I think I've done a really good job of that.
Each player at times, no matter how good they are, will struggle with confidence. And do you feel that maintaining that confidence and being consistent with who you are and not tinkering too much, kind of staying the course, is that one of the keys for you? Or do you find yourself at times when things maybe aren't going the way that you want, adjusting?
Yeah, I mean, I think not changing too much is important, but at the same time, you don't want to be stubborn. So you know, I think it's finding that fine line of it's not panicking, it's just trying to get things right. So I think when you're not confident, when you're struggling a little bit, I think it's okay to mess with some stuff as long as you're not, you know, overhauling.
Do you feel that you're in some ways underrated? I mean, we see the Bo Bichette jerseys starting to come even here at Fenway Park, and you're certainly becoming a star. You're an all-star this year, but do you feel that in some ways you have not been perhaps appreciated as much for what you have done this early?
I have no idea how people look at me, to be honest. So if I am underappreciated, that's fine. I'm just going to keep on going out there and playing as hard as I can and working as hard as I can and trying to produce at the highest level I can.
When you look at your approach, it's one that makes so much sense for each hitter. And the Red Sox have talked about this from a pitching perspective, where you want to get ahead in the count. Well, if you're a hitter, you're going to get the best pitches early on, and why not swing at them? If you're a pitcher, you want to pound the strike zone and put yourself ahead. And that battle early on in the strike zone has led to a lot of hitters not swinging early on and trying to drive the count. What is the philosophy behind, you know, your aggression? And do you feel that you have a skill set that allows for you to do things early in the count that other hitters don't? Or is it just the simple aspect of they're trying to get ahead, usually with fastballs, and it's not a good opportunity to get good pitches to hit?
Yeah, you know, I don't really think they are trying to get ahead with fastballs that much. To be honest, I wouldn't call it a philosophy. I'm really just being who I am. I make contact And whenever I try to be patient, it doesn't really work out that well. So I'm just trying to be myself. I'm an aggressive by nature. I have an ability to hit the ball when I swing at it. And so, I just go up there and do my best.
So you find yourself being able to react regardless of what they're trying to throw early in the count, whether they're trying to get ahead, whether they're throwing off speed, whether they're throwing fastball. It's just kind of a read-react aspect of things?
Yeah, I mean, some days are harder than others. Some days are you pick up the ball really easy, some days you don't, but it's just part of it. The days you don't, you got to battle a little bit harder, just fight lack of confidence, like you said, and just compete. So for me, it's just about competing when I don't feel good, and when I do feel good, the game, can get easy sometimes.
What are some of the areas that you look at and say, I need to get better? If I'm going to, make it to the next level and be one of the all-time greats, this is what I have to do.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you can always swing at better pitches. You can always make your mechanics cleaner. You can always be more consistent in your mentality and all of that. But for me, it's just about continuing to work every day, continue trying to get better. At all of those things. I mean, it's not going to show up tomorrow, but you just can continue to work on it, continue to trust your preparation in the game. And, I think if I do that stuff that, things will work out.
What did All-Star mean to you this year? I mean, you mentioned the fact that you're not really too concerned with how you're perceived, but that type of a recognition here in what is basically your first full season certainly is significant. Was that something that was significant to you?
Yeah, I think it's a goal for sure. The All-Star game is not necessarily the goal, but, putting yourself in a position to be recognized as one of the better players in the first half is a goal, So for me, I didn't feel like I was 100% at my best in the first half, and to not feel that way and still make the All-Star game is a good feeling. So, I think it definitely helped me kind of just reset and start thinking of myself as that kind of guy coming in the second half.
Final thing is just some team questions where this lineup to me is the best in baseball. It may not be statistically evident in terms of runs scored, but up and down the lineup, you guys are the best. Do you feel that as well? And what do you feel that the future trajectory is for this lineup?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think every time we step on the field, we know that we can out-hit the other team. So, I think we just got to keep on competing. Keep on doing what we've been doing, but the sky's the limit. We'll continue to get better, I think, also. So as long as we just keep on going out there, like I said, prepare as best we can, compete as best we can, trust in our preparation, then we should keep on making strides.
When we talked earlier this season, you said that not having a quote-unquote home was not really an excuse. It wasn't that big of a deal. Going back to Toronto though, for the first time in nearly 2 years, do you feel that type of stability will help you guys in the second half?
I'm not sure. I would assume that the fans will help a little bit. We've had, I can't tell you how many games where we've actually had fans cheering for us. So
the Red Sox, when they were in Buffalo, it was like a home game for them.
Exactly. That's been most of our home games. So, I think the fans will help a lot. But in terms of having stability, I mean, it's really we're there for 2 months and whatever. So we'll just continue to fight and hopefully the fans give us a little bit of energy.
Well, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you.
It's been a challenging year for the New York Yankees and their second-year pitching coach, Matt Blake from Concord. Talked with Blake at Fenway Park last weekend.
If fans obviously in media have huge demands for the Yankees and are not too willing to hear about different reasons as to why things are not taking place, they just kind of want results, which certainly is understandable. What has that been like, for you, as there's been a lot of pressure on this group to start to turn things around?
Yeah, I think that's real. I obviously, with a $200+ million payroll, the expectations are high, especially with, being the Yankees, that there's an expectation to win every year. And, we're trying our best to uphold those standards and at the same time, making sure that we're putting our guys in the best situation possible to succeed. So, obviously when we got some young guys coming up, you want them to hold the standard, but realistically, sometimes they're not quite ready for it. And you just want to make sure that they understand that each step is, important for them to go through that process and get better with each outing. And I think for us, it's just, giving them some objective things that they're focused on and working on and continuing to prove on so that they can hold the standard as we move forward.
What is your process like to drown out the noise from social media or talk radio, or you know, when the fans are booing particular players. How do you stick to a process of not getting down or getting angst? Because if you feel those things, obviously that can get passed along to the players.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just putting on a filter. You know, obviously you know that if you're going on social media searching to see what they're saying, you're going to find all sorts of things, whether it's positive, negative, indifferent. You know, you get a lot of different takes. So I always just think if it's not someone you take, you know, advice from or feedback from, then it's probably not worth taking the criticism from them either. So I think it's just, it's really, you know, doing a lot of work to filter out the noise and, you know, filter, you know, who has access to your, you know, your brain, you know. So I think obviously when the boos happen, they happen for a reason and you got to improve the performance out there. But at the same time, it's like you can't wear it every day. So I think it is a challenge and it's something guys have to work on. And I think it's just really owning your own self and, you know, doing a lot of work mentally to kind of be prepared for situations like that so that you can withstand, you know, some of the noise out there because it's real. You know, people feel it and it affects them. So I think it's definitely a challenge at times, but something that you sign up for when you put on the pinstripe.
Boston Bruins now, big free agent haul, but a haul that may indicate that it is not going to be in the cards for David Krejci and Tuukka Rask to return. They signed Nick Foligno as well as Linus Ullmark, and defenseman Derek Forbort has spent some significant time in Manchester with the Monarchs, including being a part of the 2015 Calder Cup championship team.
Yeah, so when I was at the Kings, I played in the minors, and I was up in Manchester, New Hampshire. So it was like 45 minutes north of Boston, and we would come down all the time and just kind of got to explore the city. And I don't know, I just always loved it.
Your thoughts on how you've evolved as a player since your time in Manchester, particularly on the offensive side of the puck, and how do you see yourself fitting into this deep core?
I mean, yeah, like obviously I'm kind of known as like a defensive first defenseman, but you know, I think there's always room to, you know, kind of jump in and, you know, make good plays and, you know, get shots through that can, you know, help the team offensively. And, you know, I'm just excited to, you know, try and help the boys out and get that done.
Obviously, the Bruins losing Kevin Miller and also Jeremy Lauzon. Your thoughts on what you're going to be able to contribute on the PK and how a significant aspect of your game you feel like that is?
I think it's huge. I mean, I don't know. I love killing penalties. Like that feeling when you kill one off, it's like, I'm sure it's pretty similar to some guys scoring a goal, but that's kind of how I feel about it. Yeah. So if I can contribute there and, you know, help the team, you know, get wins through that, I think that's kind of what I try to focus on. And I love doing it.
Bruins certainly added to their depth. That was a concern. One of the reasons they bounced in the second round of the playoffs against the Islanders. Here's Nick Foligno.
Hey, Nick, congrats to you and the family. You mentioned the sustained competitiveness that the Bruins have had, you know, over a decade now. What do you see as being, you know, your role and also the new acquisitions in putting this team, you know, over the top and supplying some of the depth that this group has needed? And do you feel that that's going to take place?
Yeah, I do. I mean, that's the reason why I picked it. I think everyone slots in where they need to be, and that's part of a winning team. You know, it's, you have a bunch of guys that maybe have a little bit of similarities throughout their game, but you know, they play their role and they commit to their role. And that's what I'm looking to do. You know, whatever's needed of me, I'm going to go out there and perform to the best of my abilities for the team. And I think that's what Boston does so well. Over the years, their players just commit to that idea of what they need to do in order to help the team, whatever role they're in. And it makes them so dangerous because every guy is playing the exact same way they need to play up and down the lineup. And I think the guys they picked up today do that in spades for us. So I'm thrilled. You know, I think the direction that they're going is a serious one of trying to contend again. And I believe that if we find that mindset, that role that we need each guy to play, we're going to have success. And I'm looking forward to being a part of that and pushing guys along in that regard.
This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Coming up next week, Alex Verdugo and Tanner Houck from the Red Sox and Marcus Semien from the Toronto Blue Jays as the Sox battle the Jays once again for the final time this year, this time in Toronto, where the Jays will return this weekend for the first time in nearly 2 years. Also, Patriots continue training camp. We'll keep an eye on the Bruins as well, see if, in fact, it is the end for David Krejci and Tuukka Rask with the Boston Bruins. They'll have to make some moves to clear cap room if they want to keep both or either of those guys.
Here's the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Red Sox at the trade deadline acquire Kyle Schwarber from the Washington Nationals. Get two relief pitchers as well who may play a role for the team moving forward. But for the most part, they looked around them and watched a lot of other teams get better, but they feel they have some margin for error, particularly with younger players who could play a big role for the Red Sox down the stretch, whether that's Jaron Duran, who we're going to hear from in a second, Tanner Houck, who has looked great, and of course, Chris Sale is coming back on the horizon. Also, Christian Arroyo, Marwin Gonzalez, those guys have been out. They expect them to play a role for the Red Sox down the stretch of the season and into the postseason. Bruins make some moves at the trade in the free agency period. Linus Ullmark is coming in to Netmind along with Jeremy Swayman. Some questions about the future of Tuukka Rask, and David Krejci has called it a career in the NHL. He is going to play over in his native Czech Republic and has said goodbye to the Boston Bruins and their fans. We'll start, though, with the Red Sox and Jaron Duran. He's had an up-and-down start for the Red Sox in the major leagues, but as you hear in this interview, he has struggled a bit at each level in adapting to that level before he starts to dominate. Here's my conversation with Jaron Duran. Joe, my Jaron Duran, and each kid dreams of what being in the big league is going to be like. It's your entire childhood for most kids. Most kids don't actually obviously get it to happen to them. You have had it happen to you. What has the dream like as compared to the reality?
Honestly, it's not even close, because in your dreams it's hard to imagine all those fans cheering for you and watching everybody go crazy when you get a hit or when Devers hits a home run. Like, that was crazy, being on the bases and looking in the stands, seeing everybody cheer as Devers hit that home run. So that was, I can't even put that into words.
You got your firsts out of the way real quick. First big league hit on your first pitch against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium on a crazy night. And then your first big league home run at a minor league ballpark against the Toronto Blue Jays before coming back here to Fenway. How would you describe what those moments were like? What are the feelings of seeing, you know, the firsts happen? And what are the kind of things you think about in terms of the people that maybe helped you along the way, your parents, those types of things?
It just makes me extremely grateful, you know, all the people that have believed in me, even when I didn't at some points, because, you know, you get to that point sometimes because, you know, it's baseball, it's hard. But it just makes me grateful for my parents, you know, my coaches, all my friends, and all my loved ones that have pushed me and helped me, like, stay on track to where I am right now.
Yeah, I think one of the things that most fans don't understand is that even guys with the amazing talent that you guys have struggle with confidence at times. And for you, what were some of the down moments like, and what kind of got you through that and kept you on the path?
Probably, you know, like the down moments are like when you're struggling and you start to think, like, do I belong here? You know, am I good enough? Because, like, every time I'd move up a level or something, I'd be like, dang, do I belong here? Like, these guys are studs up here. And then I think just talking with my parents and just having conversations and, like, just, you know, getting self-feedback, you know, about that I can do this. And even, like, talking to myself, saying, like, I can do this. Like, I need to be positive-minded and tell myself I can do this.
What do you need to do, you know, this time around? Because each time a player comes up, they do well a lot of the time. Sometimes they don't. But then there's the natural adjustment that takes place, and the cat-and-mouse game sets in where your tendencies start to get looked at, and, you know, you have to adjust in figuring out how to make things work for you. What are the keys for you in getting through those and minimizing those down moments?
Just staying and trusting the process, you know, like JD Martinez talks about all the time, just trusting the process, you know, like, say you don't get a hit one day, it's okay, it happens, you know, it's baseball, it's a game of failure, but just keep coming in each day, work hard each day, work on your swing each day, like, have your preparation, like, you just continue on that task, like, greatness follows it, so it's just, you know, staying on the process is a big thing.
How much has Alex's belief here in you early on helped as well, where he made the big lineup change on Monday, moved JD down to fifth, and also moved you up to second and Verdugo down to sixth? That's a pretty significant thing, considering how much he has talked about how much he loves that 2-5 in this lineup. Does that help you in terms of the confidence, or does not necessarily change things?
No, not necessarily. I think he believes in me wherever he puts me. I just think that me at the top lineup maybe gives me a chance, you know, get on base for JD and Doogie and give them some RBIs and have them drive in me. And just keep the thing rolling. You know, I'm just trying to do my part for the team. You know, they've been rolling all year, so I'm just trying to get on base for the big dogs and let them eat.
Your power has developed a lot, obviously, at the minor level this year in Worcester, and we've seen it so far here as well. What have been the keys for you in hitting for more power?
You know, just I think having a better path to the ball, being more consistent with my swing is what's really helped me the most. You know, working with Doug Latta in the offseason and Lance Nowalski, the double-A hitting coach, and Mike Gedman and them at triple-A, you know, I think just having my little bit of lower hands and having a cleaner bat path has really helped me out.
And the final thing is just the culture of this team, where it seems like this is a group that genuinely likes one another. Obviously, winning helps with that, and it makes it a little fun to come to the ballpark each day when things are going well. But what have you noticed about how you, as a rookie, have been welcomed and accepted by this group as compared to, you know, how you may have expected to go into a veteran team and be accepted? Obviously, you experienced some of this in spring training, but what has that process been like as compared to what you may have thought of?
Spring training definitely helped me, you know, because I got to, you know, talk with them and, like, get to know a lot of them and have some familiar faces, because if I would have came in here not knowing anybody, it would have been a little more of a culture shock, you know, because I wouldn't want to step on any toes or get in anybody's way. But since I, like, know them a little bit, you know, it gives me a little sense of, like, I like, kind of belong here more because they're friendlier to me. They know me. I know them. It's not like I'm just some stranger coming in the clubhouse. So,
Jaron, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Great. Also talked with Red Sox starter Nick Pivetta, who's going to play a key role down the stretch for this team. Red Sox going to rely upon the starters that they have. Here's Nick Pivetta.
You know, Red Sox starter Nick Pivetta, and the ability of this rotation to make starts on a consistent basis throughout the course of the year has been pretty amazing when you consider that only one start's been missed. What do you think has led to the consistency of this rotation being able to make it starts every 5 or in some cases 6 days?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is what the guys did in the offseason, you know, trained really hard. I think that's where it all begins with. And then, you know, we have a great support staff here. We have a great coaching staff, training staff, strength staff. And, you know, they've been keeping us all really healthy, working us on day and out. And we've all been doing really good in the gym. I think it's as a collective, it's a work ethic, and it shows how hard we're working and how badly we really want it.
You obviously have bought into it, as have the rest of the starters, the reduced workload in game. And you've had, obviously, circumstances where you've been pitching really well and you've come out for the greater good and obviously being able to pitch through the course of the season. Has that been difficult at all to buy into from a competitive standpoint, or have you been able to, you know, see the big picture on a consistent basis?
I think it's always difficult as a competitive standpoint. I want to go out there as long as I possibly can every single night, because that's my job. It's what I do every 5 days. And, you know, I build up those 5 days to go as long as I can. Obviously, the organization, you know, Alex and them and the training staff, and it's all a collaboration of everybody, and they're just trying to look out for our best interests at the end of the day. And we all completely understand that, but we're never going to be really happy about it because we're competitors and we just want to go out and pitch all the time. It's what we love to do. But at the end of the day, there's a bigger picture, you know, especially with the way that we've been playing, and we're going to respect that. But at the same time, we like to compete too.
On your off days, do you do more than you've done in the past, or is it consistent in terms of what your regimen was in Philly?
I do a lot less. Play golf if right. I can, hang out with my wife, my dog, go on walks, try to get away from the field. So any off day that I have or I can have, I take off fully. I think it's just really important as a recovery standpoint. It's what they've taught me a lot. And it's what I've learned over the year talking to a lot of other guys. You know, you take advantage of those days off. So, for instance, if we're talking about, we have 6 days in between starts. I'll take that first day off, and then I'll go into my regular five-day routine.
Makes a ton of sense. So in terms of just how things have played out for you, you know, this year, what do you point to as being the reasons that you've had the success you've had? You've talked about confidence a lot. Mm-hmm. Where did, you know, that confidence come from? Was it just you coming in? Like Christian Arroyo has talked about the organization and how they just said, we believe in you and we see this for you. Did you have that happen to you as well, or where did that confidence come from?
Yeah, I think it's a confidence of what the organization has instilled on me, is a sense of pitching in the strike zone and my stuff plays in the strike zone. I think that's number one, but I think the biggest thing is I've had more consistency I've had over the years. I mean, I haven't started a game prior to this year in around, I mean, besides the two starts at the end of the year, it was about a year, I would say, I was in the bullpen and stuff. So, you know, just getting back to having that consistency, it builds more confidence. I think there's still a lot more work to be done, though, a lot more consistencies that I have to work on. But taking little victories here and there and trying to put it all together throughout a big league season.
Red Sox fans have really enjoyed watching your competitiveness on the mound. I was talking with Aaron Nola about that in the Philly series, and he said that basically, like, you're outwardly competitive, but that is a huge part of who you are, but it's maybe not all that different than what the way each starting pitcher is. Like, do you feel like you're more competitive than other guys, or does Nate and E-Rod just show it in different ways or not show it in different ways?
I think you're 100% with guys who show it and guys who don't. I wear my emotions on my sleeve. Sometimes it gets me in trouble sometimes, so I need to really learn those types of things. But also I ride those emotions, and they've helped me pitch a lot of really great baseball games. So it's just finding that fine light. I'm going to express my emotions a little bit more, do some stuff here and there. I don't really know what I'm doing half of the time. I'm just living in the moment, because at the end of the day, I'm playing big leagues. It's a lot of fun for me. You know, I grew up playing this game and always dreamt of playing it. So I think just having fun and showing competitive flair, it's not to do anything to show up anybody, but it's just to have fun. And everybody's doing it in the baseball game, so why not just have fun with it?
Do you feel like that also helps you from a mental standpoint of not, you know, over-focusing, where you're in the moment as opposed to, you know, kind of overemphasizing certain pitches, missed pitches, and things of that nature? How does it play from a mental standpoint?
I mean, from a mental standpoint, it's always pitch to pitch basis. So you throw a pitch, that result, that pitch is done. What are you going to do the next one? And then you just kind of let them snowball and keep moving forward in the most positive way you can. And then when you get off track, it's how can you get back on those train tracks as soon as possible, making those adjustments, because that's what all the really good big leaguers do. They find their adjustments quick, and they make those adjustments within one or two, three pitches, and then they continue to move. Because guys who don't make those adjustments, which I've been one of those guys in the past, they hinder you. So it's just learning from that and just going out and competing.
A conversation with Cole Hamels a couple of years ago about, you know, intellectuals and pitching and how challenging it could be. And you have come across in your media settings the first time we've met as somebody that is very thoughtful. Is that challenging for you at times to, you know, do the repetitive type things and not overthink things or try to do different things when, you know, and make in-game adjustments when maybe it's better off just sticking with the pounding the rock consistent type of mentality?
Yeah, I think it's just consistency is always going to hold strong. I think, you know, really good pitching is always going to beat really good hitting at the end of the day. So as long as you stand by that, you just go out there and you be a really good pitcher every single day, and you try to keep the runs down as much as possible.
Thanks so much. Good to meet you. Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, you too.
Bruins bring in Linus Ullmark, the goaltender from the Buffalo Sabres, which may spell the end for Tuukka Rask in Boston. David Krejci, an incredible career with the black and gold. He has called it a career with Boston and said goodbye yesterday. So we're going to hear from Linus Ullmark right now.
Hey, Linus, congrats. Welcome to Boston. What are your expectations for, you know, what this team can be this year? You mentioned the Stanley Cup earlier, but you look at yourself and a lot of the depth that's been added. Do you feel like this Bruins team that was good is much better? And B, how do you see yourself fitting into this group?
Well, it's a very tough question because, for me myself, I probably have the highest expectations. I don't really think that anyone from the outside can match that. You know, I always strive to be the best, even though it might not be as a goaltender, it might be as a person as well. But definitely, you would be a fool not to think of the Stanley Cup as your main goal and the things that we want to achieve. And for me, myself, you know, I'm really looking forward to get to know everybody for the first and foremost. And then you kind of build upon that trust factor. And, you know, it's tough to say what my expectations are, because for me, it's just about being better than I was last season and try to top that and just keep on playing hockey and enjoy it.
Big concert coming up at Fenway Park. New Kids on the Block, but opening for them, the couple of guys from New Edition, Bell, Biv, and DeVoe. Talk to those guys at Fenway.
So, guys, you're here at Fenway Park. You'll be playing with New Kids coming up on August the 6th. Yes. Talk about what that's going to be like for you guys. What's it like to be here at Fenway?
Man, the last time we were at Fenway was 1986, singing the national anthem with New Edition. And here we are almost 35 years later, and we're playing Fenway Park, man. We're excited. It's surreal. We're playing it with our homeboys, New Kids on the Block. Man, it's like I don't even have words. Excitement doesn't really describe you know, what we feel and the anticipation of playing that night.
Having a show like this growing up with you guys coming obviously from the area, what does that mean?
Oh, it's everything, man. When you think about the iconic people that have touched this building, from Bruce Springsteen and, you know, Guns N' Roses coming up, and of course new kids like Rick said a couple, two or three times before us, and so many others, it just feels like, you know, you almost, mama, I made it. You know, we done reached the pinnacle in the mountaintop. And for us growing up in this city and traveling the world, we feel like the world is our home, but we always pay homage to every team in this city, including the Red Sox. So this is a dream come true for us, for sure.
Yeah, the crowd's been so amped up here at Fenway, and I think people are just so excited to be back out and doing stuff again. And concerts is a big part of that. It brings people together. It has everybody, you know, kind of feeling the same vibe, hearing the same music. And what does it be like for you guys to be post-pandemic, and what do you think it's going to mean to fans to see you guys?
It's going to make people feel like, you know, life is somewhat back to normal. It's going to make people realize that life is short. Come to the concert, enjoy yourself, come to a Red Sox game, get out while you can, and enjoy this time, because we've all been locked down for months.
What do you expect folks to hear? What you guys have worked through, what you're going to do? You're doing a show first in Mohegan Sun on the 4th, and then here?
Man, yeah. We are going to play everything that you love about Belle Biv DeVoe. Do Me, Poison, Smack It Up, Flip It, Rub It Down, Never Trust a Big Button, a Smile, all of that, we're giving it to you.
What is it like to still be, you know, singing and being out here with this guy? You've been doing this for decades now.
Yeah. When you can do something that you love to do for as long as we have, it just feels like an ultimate blessing. It feels like you were meant to do this for a living, and we don't take it for granted at all. We have some of the best fans on this planet that have been propping us up and paying for tickets and supporting us and praying for us. So it's amazing to know that you can grow up with a group of guys and still make the almighty dollar and feed your families and do some good things for the community at the end of the day as well.
Thanks, guys. Looking forward to the show. Best of luck.
Thank you so much.
This is the Press Pass. I'm Chris Ryan.